Hello, and welcome to the InIt podcast, where we talk about the latest trends in public transit and look into the future of mobility through the eyes of leading industry experts. I'm your host, Ann Derby, and our guest today is an award-winning author and true urbanism and public transit advocate. In his internationally acclaimed book, Strap Hanger, he traveled to 14 cities across the globe to examine who is getting the sustainable mobility formula right. Teres Gresko has been named one of the top influencers on the theme of urban transportation on Twitter. Teres, welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here, Ann.
So, New York, Moscow, Paris, Copenhagen, Tokyo, Portland, Vancouver, and Philadelphia, just to name a few. Give us some background. What motivated you to travel around the world riding public transit and subsequently to write a book about it?
Well, you know, I'm sort of a frustrated city planner. When I was 8 years old, I redesigned my entire city block in Vancouver using Monopoly hotels and little houses and shut it off to cars so there'd be more areas for children to play in. And the cars would circulate in the back alleys. And actually went on to local public TV to try to sell my plan to the local population. But my life took another turn, and I became a travel writer. For 25 years, I've been traveling around the world. So I guess you could call me a travel writer. I'm more of a writer who travels, but I write for National Geographic and for the New York Times, The Guardian, lots of newspapers and magazines around the world. And I've really made a specialty of focusing on urban travel, going to different cities around the world. And I've never owned a car. I mean, I drive. I think I drive pretty well. I used to actually work as a delivery driver, but I've never really wanted to be a car owner. So my technique when I go to all these cities around the world was to explore them using public transportation. And I started to realize in my travels that, you know, the cities that I love the most, the cities that seem to be doing the best, to be creating the most community, the most conviviality, the cities that were the greenest were the ones that were really getting the public transit and walkability and bikeability formula right. So for my fifth book, Strap Hanger, I said, you know, I'm going to put together everything I've seen around the world and look at the good and the bad in urbanism and public transportation. So there are places that were sort of like paradises of sustainable transportation, like Copenhagen, which is fantastic for riding bicycles, Tokyo, which is completely built around trains, Paris, where they invented public transportation and are doing some very exciting things. And I also looked at places that weren't doing it so well, you know, cities like Phoenix and Los Angeles, which is, you know, trying to build its way out of car domination. And they're doing some great things with transportation, but they've really, you know, they've got a long way to go. So I was looking at, you know, cities that were doing it right, cities that weren't doing it so well. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. 14 cities around the world in the end, and I kind of end up in my own city where I live, Montreal, to look at what this city is doing.
So in one chapter of your book, you talk about your childhood, how it was marred by cars and trucks disrupting your street games like hockey and kick the can. Where have you seen our cities getting it right when it comes to planning for more shareable streets and sidewalks?
Well, that's a big question. You know, I wish that there were more cities in the United States that I was enthusiastic about. I mean, the cities that are doing a great job in the United States tend to be the usual suspects. I'm thinking about Minneapolis. I'm thinking about Chicago. I'm thinking about DC. I'm thinking about Philadelphia, Seattle, Portland. These are cities, and of course, New York. I mean, but these are cities that have always been walkable. They have good bones. They were built around dense neighborhoods. So many cities in the United States, particularly in the South and the West, were built after the coming of the automobile, and really they've got a long way to go. There, you know, there's the complete streets policies, which are helping cities when they are rebuilding neighborhoods to take into account walkability and bikeability, but that's a very slow process. Now, the classic thing to do is to look to Europe when you're looking for good examples around the world. And I do think you have to look to Europe. There are a lot of exciting things going on, particularly in Barcelona, where they've got the super blocks program, 9 square block areas. Cars can only circulate around on arterials around the edges of these super blocks. And you can go in, but you can as a driver, but you can only go in at walking speed, basically 10 kilometers an hour. And all of a sudden, these whole districts are being opened up and are becoming these new neighborhoods where neighbors are getting to know each other again. Paris is another good example. But I don't think you have to go that far. I think you can stay on the North American continent and look northwards to Canada, which has much higher rates of transit uptake, transit use. And there are a couple of cities that are doing some very interesting things with transit and bikeability and walkability. I'm thinking of Vancouver, where I grew up, and Montreal. But in Vancouver, they're doing really great stuff. It's very Asian-style transportation. It's based on the SkyTrain technology. Automated, elevated trains are constantly adding new lines. They've got a great frequent bus network, all electric, and they're building great protected bike lanes. And here in Montreal, where things can look a little more European, we have a very progressive mayor. Her name is Valérie Plante. Incidentally, three of the most exciting cities for sustainable transportation around the world right now are run by women. They have female mayors. There's Callao in Barcelona, Hidalgo in Paris, and here in Montreal, we have our Valérie Plante. And she and her party, Projet Montréal, are doing fantastic things with building miles and miles of protected bike lanes. They're doing pilot projects with Jump and Lime, but they're doing it in a very smart way. They're seeing, okay, is this going to work for our city? We'll try these things out. And she's building transit in cooperation with the federal and the provincial government here. So we're finally getting new subway lines and this automated electric metro, which will be running out to the airport next year. So, you know, there are good things going on in the United States, but I'd say if you're looking for real inspiration, look north of the border right now.
Terrace, you mentioned Portland in the United States, and I was recently there and had the opportunity to cross the Tillicum Crossing, which is a new bridge that was built specifically for public transit use, walkers or pedestrians, and bikers only. So I do know there's some good things happening in the United States.
Yeah, I don't want to sell it short. I mean, Portland has always been, you know, at the forefront. And, you know, New York transformed its streets under Janet Sadek Kahn in particular, and it did it in a very bold way, Broadway and Times Square and all of these pedestrian plazas. There are good things going on. I just think it's been a little slow lately, whereas the two Canadian cities in particular, Vancouver and Montreal, are really forging ahead in a way that I haven't really seen in so many American cities. You know, Los Angeles gets singled out as sort of, you know, this bastion of car culture, but I think it's really underrated. It's, you know, they've built the subway to Santa Monica. The local transit agency Metro is doing some really wonderful things with bus rapid transit and express buses. And the LA DOT has its great system of dash buses. So, I mean, there are positive stories in the United States. It's just that to see something, a real dramatic transformation, I encourage people to look at these two Canadian cities right now.
Right. Terrace, I know you're a real proponent of buses and bus rapid transit. I think you call them the workhorses of public transit. Over the last few years, though, there's been a lot of movement toward mobility as a service, where buses and trains, Ubers and Lyfts, bikes and scooters are all integrated for a full mobility solution. Can you talk about your thoughts on this movement?
Well, you know, in theory, I really like the idea. I like the idea, you know, that you look not so much at any one mode, but consider all of them as ways of getting around a city or an urban area or a region. One city that's doing it very well is Vienna in Austria, where there are offering this €1 a day total mobility package. Now, my problem is that I'm really about fixed route transit. I think that we get a little caught up in the flavors of the day, you know, whether they're e-scooters, this kind of thing, and bike share or ride hailing. Really, the workhorse of urban transportation are the old 19th century modes like light rail, I mean, going back to tramways, like buses, And of course, the subway, which, you know, the first subways were invented at the end of the 19th century. They're the things that make cities work all around the world. And it works in Vienna because they have a really well-developed public transit system. So I'm always saying, you know, let's not get too distracted by these things. Fixed route transit has been working since the 17th century when Blaise Pascal in Paris invented the first carrosse à cinq sous. These were these 5-cent horse-drawn carriages that worked on fixed routes. That's a classic idea. And it's not glamorous. It's not sexy. But it's the one thing that works. You can do incredible things by simplifying and increasing the frequency of a city's or urban area's bus system, just buses. You know, very simple. It doesn't have to be the sexy, glamorous light rail project or tramway. That's the beginning. And the other things are great. But my question is, mobility as a service, is it sometimes it's just an app that simplifies your life? I think that's great. A lot of cities in Asia are making it very simple to pay, to envision a trip as, you know, one experience where you can connect via public transit, do part of it by Uber or ride hailing, do part of it by bike or scooter. That's great. But if you don't get the basics, fundamental of a strong urban transit network, then all the rest is just bells and whistles.
One thing I believe needs to happen in the transit industry is transit agencies need to become the mobility brokers of all of these modes of transportation. I think that's the key. So, Terrace, it's been 7 years since Straphanger was published, yet the content is still very relevant for the mobility paradigm we are experiencing today. If you could add another chapter to your book, what would your thoughts be?
I think I'd do a chapter on all the distractions out there. And, you know, I'm passionate about this subject. I've stayed on top of it. I write articles about it. I would like to do a follow-up book. And if I did, I would definitely do a chapter on things like Elon Musk's Hyperloop and all of the hype around automated vehicles, automated cars, which I see as one of the biggest distractions to building good public transit, because we're constantly being told, oh, you know, things are going to be so much better in 5 years or maybe 10 years. Generally, it's 5 years. It's always 5 years away, though, and it never actually happens. But it's going to be great when the 5G network is here. We won't even have to worry about parking anymore. You know, it'll all be cars circulating around the city, and we'll share them like buses. I don't think that, I frankly don't think it's ever going to happen. And if it does, I don't know if that's a world that I want to live in. You know, like I say, like the fundamentals of good transportation are the same as they've always been. And the cities that people want to be in are cities that they can walk around, that they can maybe ride a bike or even a scooter around. And those kind of cities work with good public transportation. So I would definitely write a chapter on the distractions around transit, the hype, the techno hype that prevents us from actually just, you know, building good 10-minute or less frequency bus networks. There is one form of automated vehicle that does have a future, and it's being tested and used all around the world. That's automated transit vehicles running on, you know, their own guideways. So as I mentioned, Vancouver has one in the form of the SkyTrain. Actually, many cities have driverless trains. Countries like Korea, South Korea, are experimenting with driverless buses, and there are small shuttles that are operating in France, actually all around the world. So I think that really does have a future. But a future of Magic Highway USA, you know, that Disney came up with in the 1950s, I just think that we're going to be imagining this for decades to come. So, yeah, that would be the chapter I'd add, because that's the thing that keeps on recurring. We're not building the bus networks, the frequent bus networks, the new subway lines that we need, because we think that the new flavor, the next big thing is around the corner. I can tell you, I mean, judging from history speaks pretty strongly, it's not. Build decent transportation in the here and now.
I can definitely hear your passion coming through. Terrace, thank you so much for being with us today. Your experiences and thoughts are being echoed within our industry as we all work toward a more sustainable and healthy future. We're looking forward to hearing more of your thoughts at the upcoming Innit User Group meeting on November 4th in Albany, New York.
Thank you, Anne.
Thanks.